Today's program is brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Such a cure-all, life's such a bore when the lights are on.
All right. Triple Hex, live in studio later. Happy Super Bowl Sunday, everybody. That's why we're really here today.
Sports.
Sports. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Darren and his betrothed are making a snack stadium.
I'm the other half.
Yeah. Well, we're getting to you're up. You're effing up my patter here.
Sorry.
I have a whole plan. Joined today in the lovely studio is former guest, now co-host, Jordana Rothman.
Hi.
Welcome.
Guest co-host.
Guest. Yeah. What? We don't really. Yeah. What title do you want?
Ghost.
My ghost. My ghost with the most.
Ghostess with the mostest.
Ghostess with the mostest. Lady of Leisure.
Yes. Voluptuary.
Voluptuary. And co-author of the book Tacos. Eat them with your mouth.
Yeah. That was actually the subtitle.
Yeah. Amazon didn't take it.
Actually, the original subtitle was 666. Kill your children. 666 ideas for weeknight meals.
Oh. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It
was rejected.
But I got left on that ring before. Yeah. Well, our food guest today is another former Snacky Tunes guest who was here under another guy's company, Suspicion. Anna Polonsky, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
Who was here years ago from The Fooding, who has since left and gone on to do her own thing, the MP Shift. Who is joined by a lovely cohort who sounds like Darth Vader today and could not make it to the show. Or Darth Vodan, if you would believe the email. And welcome back.
Thank you.
So in your own words, tell us what the MP Shift is.
Yeah, so we basically help restaurant owners and hotel owners and really any lifestyle space owner to develop their vision from A to Z. So we help with concept and visual identity, branding, interior design, and marketing strategy.
I mean, there's been like interior designers for restaurants for a long time, but this kind of like essentially boutique agency model seems like relatively new, or at least there's like a number of them popping up. What place do you see this in, like, in, or why do you think this kind of came around in like modern food times?
So I think that you know, it's not enough anymore to be a good cook or to have a lovely restaurant. You really need more than just the food and a good service nowadays. And so more and more chef and, again, hotel people are hiring many agencies to have a good brand beyond their food. But I feel like, and, you know, Amy and I felt like a lot of time the agencies they hire just create their own vision instead of reflecting their client's vision. And so you have a lot of spaces that end up being very irrelevant. You know, the PR agency talks about it in a way that's different from the graphic designer conceived the logo, that's different from how the chef cooks. So we thought there was a need for an agency to really help being brand keepers, basically, for the owners.
Do you feel like what you do is replacing the more traditional model of like PR and maybe an in-house marketing person?
Yeah, I think so. That's actually how we started the company. Because mm-hmm. When I left The Fooding, I was freelancing for a little bit, and I was helping chef to do their own PR. Because I feel like most PR agencies are not really efficient. And I figured, I was like, the problem is not really PR. The problem is branding, because they're not even able to put words on what they do. So, you know, PR can be effective if branding isn't solid. So I was thinking about that. And meanwhile, my partner, Amy, who had been doing a lot of marketing and interior design on the side, was like, you know, it's the same. When I ask an owner, what's the vision for this space? They'll tell me blue or bottles of wine on the window. Mm-hmm. And there has to be more than that, you know, on their concept. So we thought, you know, we really need to help these people from the seed to the launch, because it's not enough to just have one agency at some point in the process to help you. It's just too late.
So Jordana and I want to open up a Brussels sprout forward restaurant.
Yeah, this is our dream. Yeah,
this is our dream. We bring you and Amy and we sit down and we say, you know, my father was a Brussels sprout farmer. Oddly enough, Jordana's great-grandmother made the current strain of Brussels sprouts that are commonly in today.
Yeah, that's where the money comes from.
we're really proud of this. What are some of like the first steps that you take with us to kind of start to focus or kind of like educate yourself on like our like where we should take the restaurant, the concept?
Right. So there is a whole protocol, really. Yeah. We start with a brain questionnaire and, you know, literally we'll be like, so what does it mean it's a Brussels sprout concept? Is it a Jewish Brussels sprout concept? Is it a...
I mean, obviously.
Well.
Yeah, but,
well,
you know.
She's got our number already. Branding expert.
But then if it's Jewish, is it pan-Jewish? Is it Sephardic and Ashkenazi? Is it fusion Jewish? You know, it's just with one idea, there are so many different concepts. And a lot of time people don't think about that. So we'll start with all these questions. We'll ask you, what are your inspirations? You know, what other places do you like, not like... what do you want to be, really? And it sounds much easier than it is. Most people just have a really hard time answering, and it usually takes a few weeks to get answers. And then from then, we'll work on a creative direction, you know, offer you a few options, and then work with artists and architects and, you know, really act like creative directors for you, which sounds really obnoxious, but it's really this kind of advertising approach, you know, applied to restaurants.
It's so interesting because I feel like I definitely see this shift happening from, you know, just from my perspective and as a journalist and the people that I'm calling on the other end of the phone to arrange interviews or whatever it is. Those people have changed a lot. And I think that it's not enough to bring a PR agency on. They might have like deep contacts in this world, but they at times, and this is not true of every agency, but at times there's a certain either like a one size fits all taste level or just a sort of like inability to understand the sort of articulation of what makes a place really unique. And I think that comes down to, like, it sounds like you have developed this really interesting questionnaire. I would actually like love to take it myself to kind of, but also,
well,
like,
I mean, the sprouts.
The sprout, but also, you know, I know the kinds of chefs and the kinds of projects that you work on. And I feel like it also comes down to you being sort of picky about who you choose to work with so that you know that you can actually bring something to the table. You can't just take on any client because you need to take on someone who has the ability and the courage and the conviction to develop their own sensibility and stick to it and, you know, carry it through.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's, I mean, what you say is important because we are a little picky and, you know, we want to work with people we respect and where we feel like there is a real story and it's not just a business concept.
Right.
But also, the whole approach of the company that no one else has is that we don't want to have a signature style. And what it means is that we feel like Acme shouldn't be the same brand as the Sussman Brothers food concept. And there should be different from a Rockaway Beach pop-up, you know. And that's the problem with a lot of design agencies and branding agencies is that, you know, you go to the Standard and you go to Upland and you're like, oh, that looks like the same designer, you know. Is it the same owner? And that's a problem because it's not the same owner. And we feel like it's a big problem when it's not the owner's vision, you know, that shows.
But if any of your clients gone to be like, I want that. And you're like, you think you want that, but that doesn't actually speak to them. Like, have you encouraged that? And
no. And
if so, like, what type of, or how do you kind of guide them away from that?
So, I mean, that's our biggest challenge, and it's a real, real problem right now because, you know, people, I think rents are so high in New York City that people don't really want to take risk too much, and they feel like if they do, like, the neighbor that became successful, then they'll be successful. And so, typically, whether you're a Thai restaurant or a coffee shop, you know, you'll want Barnwood and Edison bulbs, or right now it's more LA, so it's more like colorful tables and, you know,
Subway tiles.
Yeah, Subway tiles. And so, that's our role to talk them out of this and show them a lot of inspirations, and it's just a lot of convincing to be like, you know, if you're a Thai restaurant, you don't have to be like Frankie's or Stumptown, you know,
right,
you can be
right.
Different.
You work with El Rey, right? Is that
not with? Well, we've been working with Gerardo, the
right,
chef,
right.
Who did the pop up in Rockaway.
Oh, that's
the summer
right.
Shift.
So, talk to us about Rockaway.
Yeah, Rockaway was great. What happened is that the famous Rockaway Taco Shack closed down for the summer. Andrew, the former chef, who I love, by the way, left and opened Tacoway Beach. So David Selig, who's the owner of the Taco Shack, called us and said, you know, what can we do for the season until I find a replacement? And so we thought, you know, let's do something that's not too far away from the taco, but let's expand it a little bit and, you know, let's use a trend that people talk about right now, which was Latin food. And then let's redesign it so it's relevant. And, you know, let's show what we can do, basically, but on the temporary level. So we redesigned it, repainted it, you know, casted a bunch of different chefs from the city who were not just, like, you know, grandmothers from Latin America, more young chefs who had some roots in Latin America. And we had them just do beach foods all summer. So Gerardo did it. Camille Becerra did it. Fernando Sr.
Yeah.
Did it.
These are also just these chefs, you know, if you're not familiar with them at home, they're so to your point about these people having their own stories and their own styles, I mean, Camille is such a has such a distinctive point of view, both in the way that she cooks, but also like the way that she presents in the world and the photographs that she takes, and she's just like very styled. And like Gerardo, I am like so psyched about his food, and I can't stop talking about him. Actually, like I think that he is such an exciting person. Have you eaten there at El Rey? His food is so interesting. There's not, I mean, it does have that like LA vibe, but there's not really anything else so much like that happening in New York right now. I think it's so distinctive and cool.
And yeah. for the shack itself, I mean, one of the things that I thought that you did exceptionally well was like the curation of the people that went in there. It'd have been very easy to go with like just some of like the heavy hitters and just like, I mean, with your background, especially with the fooding, which like, you know, nothing on the fooding, but like the names in there were like, oh, we know these names. But I thought that when you picked like kind of left to center, like where did the curation or like how did you kind of put that team together for the summer?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the company is called the MP Shift because we try to shift perceptions and habits. And so in whatever we do, we try to not be too obvious. And one of the things that, you know, I hate in the food world is that it's all about the big names and the network. And I feel like a lot of time we just tend to forget, you know, honest cooks that just want to make good food, and they might not be in the right networks or do the right events. You know, they're not at MAD in Copenhagen and all of that, but they're amazing chefs. And so that's the kind of people we try to support. It doesn't mean we don't respect the big chef, but you know, they don't need us. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to talk about living at Rockaway. We're going to go back to the questionnaire a little bit, and then we've got Triple Hex live in studio in just a little bit. But this is Johnny Lamb, who I barely missed seeing out two nights ago. So I thought we'd play a song from him when he was here live on Snacky Tunes. We'll be right back.
Ain't that funny what you do to me? You're my honey, as far as I can see. And you told me that you found someone new. Ain't it funny what time can do? It ain't that funny, 'cause I'm so blue. I could love a million girls or two, but I'll never be over you. Money, a car or two, I'd pay your rent. Well, I'd even steal for you. I could break the law, commit a crime or two. Ain't it funny what love can do? Yeah, ain't that funny?
Ain't that funny?
What you do?
What you do?
It ain't that funny, 'cause I'm so blue. I could win a million bucks or two, but I'll never be over you. Oh, one more time, Johnny. I'm gonna hit every bar in this doggone town, have a smoke, pop a pill or two, drink some whiskey and eat a big old steak too. Ain't it funny what love can do? Yeah, ain't that funny?
Ain't that funny?
What you do?
What you do?
It ain't that funny, 'cause I'm so blue. I could drink a million beers or two, but I'll never be over you. I think I'll have a drink with a girl named Sue, but I'll never be over you.
Living in Rockaway for the summer, one of the great things that you introduced me to was the farm that we had the dinner in. So, like, what kind of shifts did you see from the community, and kind of like, did it, you know, living there for the summer affect the way that you wanted to approach guiding chefs, especially with like so many rotating chefs kind of coming through?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, what's great in Rockaway is that although it's becoming more and more hip and on the map, and, you know, I mean, Jordana would never go anymore to Rockaway, typically.
I'm an Asbury Park girl these days. No, that's not true. I love Rockaway.
But, you know, it's still an hour away from the city, and it was really great to see, you know, the Komodo guys, Camille. I mean, people who are generally in Soho and always interviewed by magazine and very much under the spotlight, it was great to see them just be super chill and maybe cook a little differently, just be different people because they were in a different context. And, you know, again, it convinces me that it's not completely normal, the food industry in New York City. It's just a lot of pressure, and it's all about the names and all of that. And I'm, you know, we're more and more interested in doing things outside of New York as well. Right now we're doing a project in Boston, actually.
What is that?
It's going to be...
It's the worst town in America.
There's a town. You said
Boston.
Boston?
Boston,
yeah. No, you know, and it's an amazing chef, Christopher Willis, who used to cook at Per Se and other places in New York. And like a lot of chefs, you know, he's leaving New York City because it's too expensive, it's too crazy, it's too much pressure. And so we're doing the visual identity for his restaurant. And yeah, and, you know, so it sounds less glamorous than being in Soho, but we just feel like being in Rockaway or in Boston or anywhere else just allows for more creativity, you know, for chefs. And the other thing we loved in Rockaway was the simplicity of chef out there, the local chef. You know, there is Wit from Wit the Pizzeria. There is the Peruvian girls from Cheeks to Go and La Cevicheria. Umaz.
I mean, I was just waiting for the crowd favorite.
The Uzbeki place, you know. And these people just make incredible food. I mean, really food that I crave much more than most of the new hotspots.
Oh,
in
I think
York
about
City.
Those Uma dumplings.
Yeah,
all the
you
time.
Can get enough of this. And it just was really refreshing to see that there is also, you know, a place for people like that. And again, they're very simple people, not doing TV, not doing anything. They just make incredible food. So it just was very reassuring to see that people and appreciate that.
Not to contradict you earlier, but it's like, you know, what you're kind of going back towards is like the beauty of the food kind of shining through above all else. Your kind of pitch is like, that's just not enough anymore. So like, where do you strike the balance of that messaging?
Well, I'd love for... It would be great if there was not a need for a company like us. That would be an ideal world. But the problem is that there is a need for us. And so I'd rather be able to, you know, help chef. And Amy is the same. You know, she started to do design because she felt like there was such a disconnect between the design and vision. And so we, since it's the world we live in, we want to be able to help chef make the right decisions, you know, instead of just putting all this money in the wrong people and closing down a year later.
That's interesting. I mean, is your goal that these chefs that are you training wheels, or are you like long time, like kind of just continue to grow with the chefs? Or is there some point where you think like you're like big enough in your own way and you'll like focus your efforts on someone else?
We really, I mean, we do a lot of things already, so we tend to stop once the restaurant has opened. But, you know, it depends. Typically, Maiden Lane, which you were mentioning earlier, which is this incredible wine bar in the East Village, or the first bar specialized in teen seafood in America. We've started to work with them 2 years after they had opened, and we helped them with marketing, with messaging. They used to, you know, they used to have a lot of fans, a lot of chefs go there, a lot of sommeliers go there. But the press wouldn't really go there because, again, they're not stars. They're not in the right network. And, you know, we help them. We train them, as you said. You know, instead of having say, well, we serve great canned seafood, which people think is really gross, you know, we were like, just insist on all of the incredible people you work with in Europe, you know, and the quality of traditional fisheries and, you know, all this kind of messaging and help them a lot. I mean, definitely the message came out much stronger. Mm-hmm. So
when in the process do you try the food?
as early as possible. Yeah.
Does that influence whether or not you'll take that client?
Well, I have to say for now, most people we've worked with had already cooked before. Typically, we worked on the Sussman Brothers Semisa food concept for the branding. And, you know, we know Eli's food from
My Land,
and we know Max's food from the Cleveland and Roberta. So, you know, we trusted them already.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a good question because, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what's our reaction when we, you know, when we work with a first-time chef. But I don't think it should influence us too much as long as the guy is very sincere and, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, it's so subjective to say I like or I don't like the food. It's more about how authentic it is, I feel.
When you're working with the chefs and kind of opening up the, like, the early questionnaire moments, like, what is the kind of like breakthrough moment, or when do you feel that like you have like arrived, or like the amount of information to begin to start to make suggestions, or that you begin to understand where they're coming from? Kind of like the crack moment, the aha.
Yeah, it's rarely that sudden and immediate. You know, it's never really enough to just have the chef's answers. It's really interesting to go through the graphic design process, because it's when it becomes more real. And that's how you build a story. I mean, unfortunately, there isn't really any aha moment. And if there is, generally, they don't really need us. You know, if they're so strong in their brand, they're just good to go.
I want to make sure we talk about before you go, but what are you currently working on that you can talk about?
Yes, there is not much we can talk about right now, but we just finished a brand identity for Acme, the restaurant and club in Soho. They just reopened with a different chef.
Did they change their type of food as well?
Yeah, they used to work with Mads, who's an amazing chef, but, you know, he was serving very delicate, very precious Scandinavian food, which wasn't necessarily the best fit for such a huge place. So now they're working with Brian, who used to work with Danielle. And it's more of a brasserie with Italian accents. You know, a great case where you might work with an amazing chef, but it doesn't mean it's right for your brand.
How do you kind of change the awareness of the product?
That's my question, too.
You know, it had such a... I mean, Acme was such an interesting case, I feel like, because Mads had so much resonance with a very niche community in New York City of people who were aware of his reputation. But that kind of food, you need to on-ramp with that kind of food. You know, you can't just, like, dig into the lichen, you know? Like, it takes, like, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of, like, getting used to, you know? And it can be very, very beautiful, as it was there. But it's been open for a while. And so how do you then shift it to something? How do you work with the existing clientele? How do you...
Yeah, and also the second part is, like, what story do you start to feed to the press?
Right.
Because I had read that they had shifted their foods. Like, what is the strategy of, like, essentially a name? But what is it, a name?
Well, I think not everyone can afford to do what they did. I think Acme, you know, could just replace the chef after so many years because they have such a big name, and they have, you know, and they had a name before it was even the owners. It's just Acme, the restaurant has been around for 30 years and everybody knows the awning. And so, you know, people will always be curious and will go anyway. I don't think it's true for any other restaurateur. And then, you know, I think, to be honest, I don't think Acme is just the foodie destination. So I think in our foodie world, it's like, oh my God, how is it possible and what's going to happen? But I think a lot of people just go to Acme because it's fun and sexy. And, you know, they're also the owners of Indochine, which is another extremely sexy place. But you don't really go there because of the chef, you know. So in that case, it's more than just food, because I think their new chef is a great chef. But I don't think people will be obsessed too much with that change in food. And
Okay. Well, thank you for coming. We could probably talk about this for hours, but if anybody listening wants to reach out to you and potentially take your questionnaire, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
They can go to our website, theempyshift.com. Do you want to spell that?
Yeah, spell it out, because with your accent, it sounds the empty shift.
I was going to say. Yeah, but,
which is like the antithesis, but yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so it's theempshift.com. .com. Okay.
Cool. Great. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on. We have Triple Hex coming in live next, but up next is probably one of my all-time favorite performances on Snacky Tunes from this artist, Juliana Barwick, which is just wonderful. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Welcome, Triple Hex, to the studio on this kind of weird, not fall, not winter, not anything, weird weather day. Do you want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Yeah, hi, I'm Dave.
Chip.
Lila.
When I was reading about you guys, there's like two things that struck me. One, bands can now be say that from the early aughts and there's like some distance there, which I didn't like, which I used to not think as like that, like a time frame that was significant. And you also probably have released records on the best record label names, like collectively, as all, of all time. I want to dream that it's like just one record label and you're just like cycling out different like cool names. I just want to read them just because they're so rad. Thigh High Records, Lucinda Records, Mon Ami Records, Dead Goat Records. I mean, I'll go on. But it's like just like, I was like, are they fucking with me or is this just like awesome? So do you pick it based on name or?
They're not all our labels. Yeah. The Lucinda's in Spain. The Mon Ami was another label in New York. And then Death Goat's a new one, but Thigh High was the Triple Hex.
Okay.
Label,
I mean, fantastic. Yeah. That's really just, I mean, the bar is really, really, really high for that. How did you all form and meet?
I knew Chip for a while, I guess, and on Ludlow Street, I guess, right?
Yeah, we met on Ludlow.
Like, actually on the street?
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell the story? Because, like, that seems like such, like, an old New York story.
We also met on Ludlow Street later.
Yeah,
actually the same, all from TG170, I guess, right?
Yeah, which is, like, right above the recording studio that Triple Hex records on.
Yeah, New York Head Studio was in a Maverick Ray's recording studio was in a basement.
Okay.
And TG170 was above it. So Triple Hex was recording one time, and we didn't have a bass player. And at the time, it was just a drummer and myself. And the old drummer, Julie's like, oh, Chip plays keyboards upstairs. Let's go grab her. You know, so she introduced herself to Chip, and and she's been in the band since.
I'd always be outside smoking cigarettes, and we literally just met. I was outside smoking a cigarette. Hey, you want to play with us?
That's like a story straight out of the 70s, which is great because like it evokes your music very well. It's like the shorthand of like finding someone who like just put their band references on a flyer with a tearaway number that doesn't have an error code because there was no
yeah,
need.
Totally, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Wait, did you go and record that day immediately?
Not that day, but we worked on some stuff. Probably like maybe a month later.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
So you could like work and then run downstairs and then go back upstairs.
Yeah. Smoke breaks. Come down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like. Hey, we noticed your smoke breaks went from like 5 minutes to like 2 hours.
a day.
Yeah. Or like you know, a year. But you know, it's like. And then wait. So what's your meeting on the street story?
Well, yeah. You met her at TG once at the store that Chip used to work at.
I came into the street and okay. Just like inserted myself there.
Did you offer up? Did you like have a pair of drumsticks with you? Or did you offer that? We're like just you know. Just
I probably did like in my bag. So you know, we met and started working together, became friends, and I was playing with some other bands at the time. I did fill in for them on a show back in the day, but I was a little intimidated by.
But yeah, so she, yeah, so she met. It's on Ludlow, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We all met on Ludlow.
So anyone listening, if you want to get into this band, just like hang out on Ludlow Street and just kind of just like walk. Do you need to be like carrying like an instrument, maybe like a guitar or like a xylophone? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Guitar would be good. Probably.
Yeah. Why don't we hear a song?
Okay. Sure.
What are you going to play first?
I'll play a song off the new record called Long Hot Summer.
Okay. And what record label is this on?
Death Goat.
Perfect. Yeah. Which is my favorite, by the way.
It is off.
Yeah. Okay.
Y'all set, Lila? We'll be right back.
I really like all the influences you can hear in the music, but one of the ones that I like the most is New York. And I'm kind of curious, like, how this city now works its way into your music and how you guys make your sound.
Recently, like New York in modern day?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how it's. I think it's just kind of probably in all our blood from growing up. I'm guessing, right? I mean.
Are you all from here, or?
Yeah, well, Lila's from the Bronx, right? Chip is from Long Island. I'm from upstate. Yeah. But I've been here for like 20 years, yeah. All of us, so.
What is it about the city that, like, I mean, just adds that layer into the music?
Well, you know, that song is just, like, Long Hot Summer is kind of like,
oh yeah,
when it gets really hot and things are just about to, like, kick off. You know what I mean? At any minute, like, yeah. Like, everyone's about to, like, fight and, like, lose their shit. So it's kind of like, you can hear it in there,
you
for
can,
sure.
Yeah, you can really feel it on a hot summer night, you know? It's just like...
Yeah, just, like, listening to that song just made me think of, like, the first summer living here being like, I don't need a fucking air conditioner. And then, like, come August, I just, like, what was I thinking? And yeah. Just, like, but not having the money and just being like, this is a long fucking summer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. So that's where I came from. I think New York is always kind of, like... You know, we're from here, so it kind of just always works its way into our bloodstream, mothery, you know.
Do you believe like that argument that people like put out that like New York's dead and like no one can do things as an artist here and like everything's moving away?
I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, I think I don't know. That's my opinion. I mean, I think you can probably move anywhere and make art. I think New York is probably, it's my home. It's our home. So what are we going to do? Like pack up and leave?
Who else will have us?
Yeah.
Who else would have it? I don't know. Like some small town.
Pittsburgh, like, I guess everyone's moving to Pittsburgh.
I want to go to Detroit, pardon me.
Yeah. Pittsburgh is cool, though.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and then like over the years, like it kind of seems like it's ingrained. And I just think that people maybe sometimes get like, the music just isn't where they left it. It just like kind of moves, but it's always kind of like out there and finding inspiration.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Lou Reed used to sing about like, don't go through the park at night, and that was like Union Square.
Yeah.
You know, when was the last time Union Square was really dangerous and there was like prostitutes in Union Square, like literally like what, 35, 40 years ago probably or something, you know? So
yeah. Now it's probably like just like don't go to Ridgewood at like 2 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not a great lyric, but you know. Can we hear another song?
Sure. Yeah.
What's this one?
I will do Trouble in Waters is off the new record as well.
Okay, great.
Get Lila all set up then. You all set, or?
Future desires.
trouble following me wherever I go. There's trouble and water washing over me, drowning my thoughts of future desires. There's trouble and water washing over me, drowning my thoughts of future desires. Water washing over me, drowning my thoughts with future desires. It's troubling, water washing over me, drowning my thoughts with future desires.
Talk about the new record. How did this come into existence?
I guess we started working on Chip and I did, I don't know, like 3 years ago. And we wrote like, I guess, five songs for it. And then we just stopped playing for a bit, kind of, because we were, you know, financing it all ourselves. I guess we kind of ran out of money. And then last year we started, you know, actually Matt from the studio was gracious enough to like, do that for us. But anyhow, and then last year we got Lila back in the fold, and we just went back and recorded another six songs with her, you know, in the fall, and now we're putting it out, you know, next month.
That's awesome. How is it, I mean, writing a song over like that, record that over that many years, did the songs from 3 years ago kind of still stay true to now, or like did you go back and like kind of re-evaluate them or update them?
Yeah, we wanted to, you know, we updated them a little bit, but we wanted to we just wrote new songs as well.
You're like, sorry, guys. So, sorry, you don't get to come into
keep
the
it moving. Yeah, keep it moving. Keep it moving. Yeah.
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 And what kind of comes out on this record? Like, I mean, maybe more so than some of the other releases, either lyrically or sonically or both?
I think lyrically, maybe we, you know, expand a little bit more. Like, Chip wrote, you know, more lyrics on this record, a few songs, right? Yeah, and then so expanded a little bit that way vocally, lyrically on that, and then I don't know. I guess we just kind of we don't really have like a set in stone. We kind of sometimes, I guess, all the songs kind of turn out, and they kind of all sound like Triple Hex, but we kind of go in there saying this is what we're going to sound like. Yeah. We just kind of write the songs, and they kind of.
When does it become I always am curious to know from Dreamers, like, when does it become like an idea into a Triple Hex? Because I mean, you've been on with multiple bands here, and they like, I mean, they sit in maybe like a similar universe, but they definitely don't have the same sound. So like, when does something become a Triple Hex song in your eyes?
When we played on this radio station right now.
Oh, okay, well, yes, obviously that is the gateway. Yeah, and that's official. But when is it that you're like in the process that you're just like, okay, like this finally sounds like something that like we could be self-identified as or like hang our hat on?
I think it's just like what we feel. Like, we, you know, there's a lot of songs we'll rehearse, rehearsal this over and over, and sometimes we'll change it a little bit, and sometimes it just doesn't really feel like it's a. I guess it's more like what songs don't feel like Triple Hex as opposed to which songs
interesting.
Do. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd ownership of like something that comes from almost nowhere to then bring it in to like make it your own.
Yeah, exactly.
In that way. Are there some that are just instantaneous and there are others that like take a while to kind of like break open?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, some songs are written in like, you know, literally an hour, you know, and that's it. Like the last song we'll play today. and then other ones take a long time, you know.
And like I thought it was interesting recording, like a lot of it would be done there, which I think is cool.
Newt, yeah,
and
right there.
What makes them
oh fun. So like in the studio for you guys it was kind of like in the post-production or in
no,
the
like
recording?
This is the first time Lila ever recorded with us. Yeah. And a lot of times like some of our songs will have like definitely a certain framework of what we do, and other songs will like, well, this is the chord progression kind of, you know, and then we'll go in and then just kind of work on it there in the studio,
which is the best part of recording.
Yeah,
it was so cool.
Well, I want to make sure we have time for one more song and just let you guys kind of breathe into that. But I want to thank MP Shift for coming on. I want to thank Jordana for being my co-host mistress. But especially a big thank you to Liz, who has been our engineer for a long time. We have grown the show together. She's going somewhere else, which we won't say, but thank you for putting up with Snacky Tunes, where I know we're pains. Shout out to Darren and Anna, my parents, and my Berliner, who's my favorite. What's the name of the last song you're going to...
It's called Love Song.
Oh, wait, and where can people find you, get the new record, see Triple Hex Live at...
That's out there somewhere. Who knows?
Okay, fine. Yeah. Okay, cool. You lost. That's a great answer. Everyone else is super ready. You're just like, fucking find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or go to Ludlow.
Yeah, Ludlow. Yeah, okay, we'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be at Ludlow. Yeah, heading out. Yeah, all of
Ludlow. Yeah, old Ludlow from like 10 years ago, maybe. Yeah, but
that's fine. All right, well, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with another episode of Snacky Things.
Thanks. Yeah, go ahead. Songs or pizza. I just want to fuck. I don't want to love songs. I just want to fuck. I don't want to love songs. I just want to fuck. I don't want to love songs. I just want to fuck. I don't want to love songs. I just want to fuck. Oh yeah. You and me. Bring a friend and make it free. Ask your friend to come along. We'll stay up all night.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.